The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon and welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investment, where this week, as every week, we are working our poor fingers to the bone to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today we got something deep for the creative finance fans out there. And even those of you who are pretty experienced, I think, are going to get a lot out of what Ari Newman has to say today. First, just some usual bookkeeping type stuff. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati has its nationwide online chapter meeting tomorrow evening. That means it's on Zoom, which means if you can hear my voice, you can attend. The topic tomorrow is investing for both profit but also for impact. We have a set of investors from all over the country who are doing different things to make money, but also they're doing things like housing folks who are difficult to house, or they are improving their own hometowns by doing renovation projects that are targeted toward more commercial things, or they are changing their entire county by creating low-income housing. It's going to be a good meeting because I think we all have those desires to do things that are meaningful with our real estate careers, but also we gotta support our families as well as other people's families. So you can get more information and get your Zoom link to that at cincinnatirea.com. That's C-I-N-C-I-N-N-A-T-I, rea.com. You folks from outside the area want to put in not enough N's and too many T's. cincinnatirea.com. My guest today is Ari Newman, who has built himself quite an extensive little real estate career since 2018. He's been focusing on mostly creative finance and acquisition and property management, but that sounds, me too, like everybody's done that, except he's done it across single family and multifamily and industrial type property. So he knows all about those things like hard money and 1031 exchanges and wrap loans and equity participation loans. And he's actually getting kind of famous in his little hometown of Atlanta. Whenever I go down there, everybody's like, oh, you know Ari? We know Ari. Because he is just really, really focused on helping people achieve their investment goals, but do it by thinking outside the box. He's joining us by phone today from the Atlanta area. Ari, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you, Vina. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
I'm so glad you're here. And I'm glad you're coming to the Creative Finance Summits too.
Yeah, we don't have much time, a couple weeks before May 1st, right?
I know. And I didn't hold it in your backyard on purpose, but it was awfully convenient. But yeah, it was there.
I'll have to make the 15-minute drive.
Yeah. Try and you know, suck it up and be there, because you've got a role there that's kind of interesting. A lot of folks who are in creative finance know Pete Fortunato. Like, I think everybody knows Pete Fortunato. Pete Fortunato's even been a guest on this show. He's like the most respected and probably most brilliant creative finance practitioner in the country. But he talks about these things. He like drops these things into the middle of conversations about, well, what you need to do is instead of figuring out how to offer them the cash they want, you need to see if they would rather have a note or if they would rather have your single family portfolio for their apartment building, or maybe you could do an over trade. And then he doesn't really explain that. And what you're going to do at the Creative Finance Summit, and also today to some extent, I hope, is explain that from step one, from what is all that thought process and how does it work? And I think in the world in which you're dealing right now, the kind of commercial big properties world, your role is what's called an exchange counselor. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so an exchange counselor can mean a number of different things, and it depends what hat I'm wearing on any specific day. Sometimes, you know, I work as a principal, me and my business partner, Nathan Webb. If there's an opportunity for us to transact as a principal, just the way a normal investor would, we'd prefer to do that, but sometimes people are reaching out to us with a specific problem, and we're offering them counseling advice. We're both licensed as agents in the state of Georgia, so we could always take them on as clients, and sometimes we do, sometimes that makes sense. But really, counseling is asking questions to discover what somebody really wants. And Pete talks about that, and I know you teach that as well. And what I've found with sellers in the commercial world, they tend to be either owner users of a business or investors of some sort. So we're dealing with people who've got more of a business mind to begin with. And those people are more willing to consider tax implications of selling. They tend to think about their estate and their heirs and what that's going to look like. So really, we start asking questions to try to figure out, what does the next step look like? And I was actually on a call with Nathan and some other people this morning, and we were talking about turning our sellers into buyers, because that's really where the counseling works best. When you've got somebody who's got equity in a property, we really want to find out, what do they want to do next with that equity? Where do we want to go with that? Because a seller is someone who can get rejected, but a buyer is someone who does the rejecting.
Okay. So say more about that. That was a little Pete-ish. Turn my seller into a buyer. Now here, I will share my experience in selling an apartment building a few years back. And of course I called a commercial broker because although I am a broker, I don't have the connections that commercial brokers have. And I can tell you 100% of our conversation was him trying to talk me into selling at a lower price. Like there was no questioning about, well, what are you going to do next? Or how long have you owned it? Or what's your basis? Zero, nothing like that. So how would you have tried to turn me into a buyer?
Yeah, so I guess the first question is, sometimes I ask it very simple and I'll say, I know this is going to sound really funny, but if Santa Claus were to come tomorrow, what would that look like? Or if I brought you this big wheelbarrow full of the $1 million you're asking for this building, and I left it in your kitchen table, when I come back 6 months from now, is it going to be there? Is this something you just want to put in your bathtub and do a Scrooge McDuck bath? Or are you actually going to use this money to buy something? So I try to, you know, disarm the conversation a little bit, make it playful, make it funny, and people tend to open up, especially commercial owners who have been entrepreneurs or have that experience.
And you know what I would have said to you? I really wish I'd have hired you, and you lived in Ohio, and you were licensed here, and that wasn't in 2012. I would have said, I'm going to buy single-family homes with the money.
So then I'd say, great, let's go shopping. What are you looking for? How can I find you? How can I find that for you? How can we use the equity you have in this multifamily to go buy single family homes? So a lot of time, you know, the analogy from Monopoly, you buy the four little greenhouses and then you exchange them into a hotel. 1031 exchange. Well, sometimes the opposite makes sense. Sometimes you want to go out of that multifamily or go out of that commercial property and go back into single family. And that could be because you have control over three or four assets. One of them you might want to liquidate now for cash and pay the tax on. One of them you might want to hold till you pass away and your heirs can inherit it with a step-up basis. Another one you might want to sell or finance now to create a stream of income. So it really just depends with the seller and what their goals are. And I think you're right. Most brokers or agents totally don't – they miss the point. They don't even ask the question, why are you selling? It's a pretty fundamental question. I know we don't think about it much because our teachers like Pete Fortunato have always ingrained that in our head when we've learned from them. That's the most important question. That's the question to ask.
And if I had known then what I know now, rather than even put it on the market, I just would have put it out and said, who's got a portfolio of single family homes you'd like to trade me for this apartment building? It would have been so much easier to do things that way. Okay. We understand what you do. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about, like, how do you do it? How do you get sellers talking to you about stuff like this? And how do you introduce the idea of taking stuff other than cash? You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Ari Newman, an investor from Atlanta who also has gone and gotten himself a real estate license and is looking not just to do things for his own portfolio, but also to help other folks, typically more commercial type investors, to get what they actually want, which is, it's another kind of creative, right? We always talk about, subject to's and wraparounds and owner financing. But half of what goes into creative financing is exactly what Ari is talking about today and at the Creative Finance Summit coming up on May 1st through 3rd in Atlanta or virtually. So, Ari, I think the thing that you're trying to open up sellers to is something other than being stuck on price and cash. I need my cash, and I need to get this much cash and get their brains open to the, there might even be a better way to get to where they're trying to go. When you're first talking to a seller, are there signs that this might not need to be a straight cash sale?
So when we're talking to anyone who owns a commercial property, we're always going to lead off with questions about their intentions. So we were talking about earlier, their motivation is the most important part. And me and our team, we actually don't take any pure brokerage listings. So if somebody just wants to list a house and sell it for, or a commercial property, sell it for as much cash as possible, we probably wouldn't take them on as a client. That's not what our specialty is. So we're going to be doing some pre-screening ahead of time. And yeah, I had a call last week with a potential seller. Somebody from our team got the lead through a referral, and it looked like it was going to be a traditional brokerage sale, and they weren't even that motivated. And about a month after the initial call, something changed in their life, and they reached back out to someone on our team and said, well, we're ready to talk about this. The property happened to be 7-minute drive from my home, and the owner was only in town that day. So I drove over there really quick, and I met him and his wife. And I didn't know too much about their story and why they were selling, but I did know that this was his retirement. This property was basically his entire retirement. So when I met there, he started talking about price and property and the building and all that stuff, which I really care about less. That's not the most important part. It actually plays a very small role of importance in the grand picture. And I said, tell me about your retirement. What does that look like? And I found out he had been an artist, and he had owned a business and this building, but he sold the business and kept the building 12 years ago. And now the tenant was finally moving out at the end of the month. So that created a big sense of urgency for him. And that's where I try to at least start the conversation, talking about what does your retirement look like without going too deep in it. You know, I just met him. I'd only been speaking to him for about 90 seconds. So you have to learn how to pace those questions without scaring somebody away. And I'm still learning that and practicing it every time I speak to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you get a seller talking to you honestly enough? I mean, I think that's the problem that a lot of folks have, is they feel like they're on the other side of a negotiating table from a seller, and that if they ask questions like, well, what are you going to do with that money? Or, I mean, you said retirement, tell me what that looks like, or what do you owe? Or anything like that, that the seller is going to like back off. You know, it's going to be like, he who speaks first loses. I'm not going to do none of your business.
Yeah, that's something I'm learning and practicing every time I speak to a seller. I think Pete gave some really good examples of how when he talks to a seller about a situation, he doesn't really say, I could do this for you. He talks about a scenario and said, I've got a friend who was able to do this. If we were able to do something like this, is there any reason why that wouldn't work for you? So I want to know about what their objections are. And I think if you neutralize it and try to get yourself on the same side of the table as them, you're much more likely to succeed in getting those answers. And that's why I think I'm trying hard to shift to that, turning them into a buyer instead of a seller strategy. Because then I can talk about, this is what we can do together, or this is how we can work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that right there. My experience in talking to tens of thousands of sellers over the last 30 plus years is that ones who are actually flexible and motivated are happy to talk to you. And it's the ones who are like, yeah, I don't really need to sell it. I'm just going to sit here and wait until somebody brings me exactly what I want. Then I'll think about maybe selling it. They're the ones who are telling you it's none of your business what their basis is or how much they owe. So, I mean, maybe that's even like almost a screening technique to find out if people are motivated.
I agree with you on that. And one of the things I've learning a lot about and getting better at is managing my time, because we don't want to spend a lot of time speaking to somebody who has no motivation. And if you've got a large team of people behind your business who take calls and screen people, you know, it's a different story. But for somebody like me and our team, we're operating pretty lean, and it's very personal business where people are revealing a lot of, you know, confidential and emotional information. So it's all about the rapport we can build up. I actually made the mistake of speaking to somebody about a month ago. It was a broker who had a client, and they said, oh, they're really interested, they're open to seller financing, they're open to do this and that, but they didn't tell me what price they wanted. And that was my mistake. I pursued it way too long without asking what they wanted. Because when we finally made them an offer, they rejected it, and they didn't tell us why, they didn't tell us anything. So we were just kind of shooting fish in a barrel and hoping we would spear one. And yeah, that was some wasted time, but I learned a valuable lesson.
Yeah. I never bother to sit down and especially create some of these complex creative finance offers until somebody has told me what their bottom dollar price is. I mean, often you can offer more than their bottom dollar price if they're willing to be creative, but if they won't say it out loud, or I don't know it, like 100% of the time I've gotten shot down once I made it. Whatever number is in their head is always way higher than whatever number is in my head.
Yeah, I don't like playing that first to say a number game. I always fail at that, and I'm not very tactful. Nathan, my partner, is much better at negotiating those scenarios in a favorable manner.
All right. When we come back, we are going to talk more about what happens next. What is the way in which things like seller financing and trading notes and things fit into these conversations? You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Ari Newman about exchange counseling, which seems like a fancy way of saying the ability to take the stance that I'm going to talk to a seller about what they really want instead of what they all say they want, which is full price and all cash. Ari is one of the featured speakers at the 2026 Creative Finance Summit coming up on May 1st through 3rd in Atlanta, or you can, if you must, attend online. I mention this because we ended up with a spare ticket after the fund drive and the pledges that we got and so on. We ended up with one spare ticket that you can still get for the not current price of $1,297 by making a pledge to WMKV. Right now the tickets are actually $1,997. So if you truly want to do creative finance, you want to learn deeply about it, along with 150 other people who are there to learn about it and get support afterwards, because it comes with a weekly call to help you put your deals together, and it also comes with a very complete home study course. You're going to want to go to wmkvfm.org, scroll down to the bottom, as long as you see that thing on the bottom that says Real Life Real Estate Creative Finance Summit, that ticket is available, and you can grab it and hopefully be able to join us in Atlanta, even though it's only a couple of weeks away, maybe though you are watching virtually. So Ari, you've gotten somebody talking, you've gotten Vina to say, what I'm going to do with my apartment building, or with my money from my apartment building after I sell it, is go back to single family homes where I am comfortable. How do you turn that into a deal that's not, okay, Ari pays cash, and then Vina takes the cash and goes and buys houses with it?
Yeah, so I'm a part of several different exchange groups. We actually have a group that Nathan hosts the first Wednesday of the month online, and it's basically a group of like-minded investors and exchangers. So we're either working with our equity or clients' equity, but everybody's on that call or other groups like that with a single-minded purpose, which is to transact. So everybody's there to do business. So in a situation like this, I would ask Vina, you know, tell me a little bit more about the property. I just need the basics, a paragraph on the property, and I want a novel on the owner. So I'm going to want to know a lot more about you and your motivation. But one of the most important things is to know about the debt on the property. And that really tells us how much equity we have to work with. So my goal as a counselor or a broker or as an investor is to take that equity and start shopping. So I'm going to become a buyer with your apartment building. And anyone who's got a package of homes on the call or at a meeting that I'm going to, I'm going to make an offer with your multifamily. And then I might ask, you know, well, tell me what else you can do. What can you do for somebody else? Can you add something else? Can you add cash to the multifamily? Do you have notes that you could add to it? Do you have options you can add to it? So we can always start with something and add more to it. And the other part too is, how motivated are you to transact? Your motivation level is also going to determine what you're willing to accept when we're out there making offers.
Okay, so again, say more. You said, do I have notes I could add to the apartment building? The answer is yes, I have notes, but I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean add it to the apartment building?
Yeah, so maybe your apartment building's worth $1 million if it went all cash. Your equity in the apartment building's worth $1 million. And you'd like to buy a $1.5 million package of single family homes. Well, you might, if we were just looking at it from an equity perspective, you're about $500,000 light. So somebody who's got the portfolio of homes might say, Vina, I love your multifamily. I'm a taker for it, but we need to balance out this equity. There's about a $500,000 difference. What else can you add? I've heard you've got this note that Bill Cook is paying on, and it's got a balance of $500,000. Can you add that into the mix? I would love to take Bill Cook's payment every month.
Oh man, I wouldn't. I don't know that I would like do that to somebody. But I get the point. I have $500,000 worth of notes, or maybe I have $500,000 worth of cash. And now are we looking at just doing like a direct trade? Like, okay, this guy who's got the $1.5 million package single family homes gets my apartment building and my $500,000 worth of notes, and I get his houses.
Yeah, it could be simple like that, and that qualifies for a 1031. I'm not giving tax or financial planning advice, but when you swap deeds, put it in your contracts language that indicates you're intending to do it for 1031. So a lot of these transactions are geared to minimize, defer, or avoid taxes, because we've all worked really, really hard to earn our equity in these properties, and there's no sense to give it up.
So this is really interesting, the way you said that, because one of the things that really confused me when I started hanging out with these deep creative finance folks 15 years ago was they would say, well, go shopping, go take your apartment building and go shopping for single family homes. And I thought, well, what are the chances? I'm sure there are people who want to trade my apartment building for their single family homes, but what are the chances I'm going to run across them? Like my network just isn't that huge. But what you're saying is, in your world, you don't have to have these single family homes. You just have to know people who might even know people. There might be two or three steps away to find a single family home. So you're not trying to acquire my apartment building with your homes. You're trying to figure out a way to acquire my apartment building maybe with somebody else's homes.
That's right. Sometimes exchangers who have developed a certain level of sophistication, one that I'm aspiring to be, I should say, treat it like a consignment shop. And when you go to these exchange meetings, I know Pete's done business this way many times, you see all the equities available. It's all the inventory out there for the taking, and you don't have to control any of it. You just have to see the opportunities to put the two pieces together, and most people don't see those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, you know, we're learning to get better at all the time as we transact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you find out that Matt has $1.5 million worth of single family homes, and you want to end up with my apartment building. So you find a way to buy those single family homes from Matt so that you can then trade them to me for my apartment building. And maybe in that other transaction, you're getting an owner carry back. Who knows how you are getting your hands on on what you need to get what you want from me. But that's the whole game, is know lots of people who think this way.
Exactly. And I think a big part for me that's been a shift in my mind is trying to move away from this idea of I got to get paid, I got to get a fee. I mean, we all have to make money somehow, and obviously owning income property is a great way to do it. But in the exchange world, it's really, really strongly based on relationships and the relationships you create. I think it was Pete who said it's much easier to do 23 transactions with the same person over 30 years than to do 23 transactions with different people. And as you build your network and work with other like-minded exchangers or investors, you're going to always keep coming back to that same group of people when you're ready to do business.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I'm very glad you have 90 whole minutes to explain this way more slowly at the Creative Finance Summit, because I, like you, I am still kind of learning to see this and to think this way. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do at the actual exchange meeting that we're having at the Creative Finance Summit.
Now we're excited for our presentation. We're going to have a good case study. We're going to spend a good bit of time on. It's actually a live deal that's been evolving since August, and it's taken a lot of twists and turns. And
as
part
we
of
do.
Yeah, you just got to stay flexible and see where you wind up sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking to sellers, I assume that you find that this is all a new idea to most of them. Like the idea that I would sell my property anyway other than cash at market price is just, you know, do they initially see that as being like risky? Like what you're saying, because it's unusual, must have some risk to it that maybe I don't understand as a traditional seller.
Yeah, I think to your point, you're definitely going to encounter that more speaking to a homeowner of a single family home. In the commercial world, because it's typically the properties are investor owned or owner user, they've been entrepreneurs, they understand debt, they understand how to run a business, if nothing else. Even if they run it poorly, they're probably going to be more receptive to exploring other ideas. In the residential world, you know, I think you've even taught about three types of sellers and their motivations, the ones that want to sell, who are typically going to list it with an agent on MLS and wait for whatever they want to get, the people who need to sell, who are faced with, you know, some hardship or circumstance in life, and the people that are forced to sell, you know, the distressed sellers. And in the residential world, it's usually the latter two who are going to be perceptive to anything else because they have to. Mm-hmm. In the commercial world, the sellers are very intentionally looking to maximize their equity and avoid paying that big taxable gain most of the time. But what we're starting to see now is even a shift in commercial markets where people are in really bad deals. People who bought multifamily when debt was really, really cheap 3 or 4 years ago, they're upside down. They're stuck and their debt ballooned or is about to balloon. And now rates are at 6 or 7 and they bought at a 3 cap. There's distressed sellers in all markets and all asset classes. It's not just the residential world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're going to take one final break. And when we come back, I want you to explain two things to me. Number one, how do you talk a seller who needs some cash for something into financing deals for you? And number two, what the heck is an overtrade? Those are going to be our two questions for after the break. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox, I think it's a really interesting conversation today with Ari Newman. Sorry that I'm not giving phone numbers and email addresses, but we actually had to pre-record this show because the station is making some upgrades in the equipment of the phone lines so that y'all won't hear that echo that we sometimes get when I've got a guest on the phone. Yeah, they're doing it all for you, ladies and gentlemen, but we can't be in the studio today because there's people crawling through the ceiling. So we're talking today about exchange counseling, about equity marketing, about these things that are, these are fancy names for how do you approach creative deals, starting with what does the seller really need? And then figure it out for them. Figure out how to get them what they really need instead of what they thought they needed when they opened the conversation. So, Ari, one of the most common situations that I run across is sellers who are not averse to payments. Because like your guy, this was their retirement. Mm-hmm. So like getting payments where I only have to pay my capital gains taxes, I receive them and not all in one big chunk where I then have like 80% of my money left to go put in something that's only going to get me 2% interest. I might as well take 6% interest on my equity now and only make the tax payments as I get the money. But then they'll say something like, well, there's one thing. I do need $100,000 because I want to pay off my home equity line, or my wife wants the fancy RV, which apparently costs more than $100,000 now. Is there any path to cash for people like that, or do you just move on, or do you just write a $100,000 check?
No, there's infinite ways to get that. It's all going to wind up at some point with cash in their hand. It might take 2 or 3 people. I was actually on a call about an hour before we were on this radio show. It was a wholesaler selling a property, and like a good diligent student, I wrote my offer, and it was even in the wholesaler's email. He gave the terms that he had negotiated for seller financing with the owner, which, you know, 6.25%, 20-year amortization, and a 7-year balloon. So even with that, the only way the property would cash flow is if it was a co-living where you kind of rent by the room property, and that's how it was being marketed. So I do what I was told from our teachers to do. You make the offer that works best for you. And that led to a conversation with my agent friend who brought this to me and the wholesaler who has it under contract. And I didn't really know where that conversation was going to go, but I was open-minded about it and asked him eventually, well, why don't you just keep this deal? If it's such a good deal, why don't you want it? And he's like, well, I've got this other project going on and I've got my money tied up in that. And I said, well, if you had the $100,000, which is exactly what he needs for the seller wants $100,000 down payment. I said, if you had that $100,000, would you do the deal? He said, yes. So then I said, well, what do you have? And he told me about the things he has, and the house that he's flipping right now is free and clear, and it's going to be worth $280,000 when it sells. So I said, the low-hanging fruit is I just give you a loan on this house that you're flipping, and you can take that cash and give it to the seller, and you don't have to wholesale the deal. So that was just one thing that came up in conversation, but every situation is going to be different, and one of the simplest ways to do it is when you're if you've got a seller who's willing to create a note, a seller finance note, he can sell a part of that note at the beginning to an investor who comes and buys it for the cash he needs. Or you just create two notes and they sell one of them right away for the cash they need.
That's another topic. We're doing a creative finance summit. Jay Redding is going to talk about how to create notes that your seller can actually sell like you promised them that they could.
I've heard Jay speak before. He's got a great strategy he talks about.
Yeah. I hear a lot of people glom onto that idea of, well, I know there's note buyers out in the world, so I can just tell the seller that he can sell the first $100,000 worth of payments. Maybe, if the note is documented correctly and has all the appropriate protections in it and so on. Otherwise, you may be lying to your seller about how they can immediately sell the first $100,000 worth of payments. So, overtrade. I keep hearing this word. I keep hearing people on exchange meetings say, well, you could offer an overtrade and that would almost for sure make the seller want to do something with you. Can you explain what that is, please?
Yeah, so the analogy I was given actually by Pete, you go to McDonald's and you're buying your 80 cents coffee and you give them a dollar and you get your coffee and you want change, right? You paid too much. So it's the same thing in real estate. I made an offer to a friend of mine who's dealing with estate property. I knew the estate had cash in it from notes that had been paid off, and the estate also had this piece of land. Actually, it's timberland. It was out of state. I didn't really care for the land. If I could buy it, I would resell it. But I really liked this investor, wanted to do business with them. And what I did was they told me the house or the land would sell for about $100,000. And I've got a free and clear single family home worth $400,000. So my offer was I'll buy the land with a $500,000 note. You'll give me I'll give you a $400,000 note secured by my property. You'll give me the deed for the land, and then I need the cash difference. I need cash. And then when I go to sell the land, I'll have a little bit more cash in my pocket too.
Break that down.
Yep.
Okay, so let's say I am that seller.
Yep.
I am getting rid of the timberland that I don't want. Mm-hmm. I am getting a note from you on a good property, I assume, for $400,000. I assume I will receive payments on. But in order to get that $500,000 worth of stuff, I have to give you what?
$400,000 cash and the deed to the timberland.
Basically, I just bought a note. And I got rid of this property that I didn't want. But so that's an interesting way of saying that. Did it work?
We're still talking about it, and I've made similar offers to other sellers. This is a very sophisticated investor and who's handling the family estate for the family, so they don't need my help. I made a similar offer to an elderly lady in her 80s in South Carolina. Similar story, piece of land, not generating any income. She'll have a large taxable event if she sells it because she inherited it. And her broker is an exchanger, and he asked her, what are you going to do with that money if you sell the land? She said, I'm going to put it in CDs and get 2%. So I offered an overtrade with a note that pays 4%. Isn't 4% better than 2%?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically all overtrade means is I'm giving you something of more value than what you're asking. I was only asking $100,000 for that piece of land. You're giving me $400,000 for that piece of land. And so you want some change.
That's exactly it.
All right. I wish somebody had just said that to me 10 years ago so that I would not have been confused. But now you've said it to the audience, so that's great. All right. So we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to talk to the listeners about next steps for them. What are the biggest mistakes that you see people who are embarking on this kind of deal making?
I think when you're starting off, you have to work with experienced investors. I mean, everybody talks about real estate being a team sport, and nobody really believes that when they're starting off. I mean, they hear it and they just treat it for what it's worth. I'm like, I'll get to that eventually. And as you become more successful in your business, you really understand your ability to scale and transact is going to increase dramatically when you're working with other people. And when you're dealing with commercial assets, you know, $8-9 million figured assets, you have to work with other people, whether it's private equity group or private equity debt. It's just something you can't do on your own. So I encourage you starting out, find those knowledgeable people in your community, in your RIA, in your local groups, and figure out how you can work with them and have something to offer. I always tell people when they're starting out, the best thing you can do is bring these opportunities. If you're good at talking to people and understanding their situations, if you're a good psychologist, if you're good at building trust, I think finding sellers and finding people who are motivated or people who are in trouble and working with them and bring that opportunity to your experienced investors is a really, really good place to start.
Amen. One thing brand new investors are really good at is digging up complex deals that they don't know what to do with next.
Yeah.
And bringing them to a local or national type of exchange meeting without, you know, don't show up and be all like, I know everything, so let me tell you how this deal is going to go. You know, come with the deal and say, here's what I got, here's what I want. Maybe it's part of the deal, maybe it's just an education in how to do the next thing. Maybe it's, you know, a lot of times these deals seem to come from family members, so maybe it's I just actually want to help my dad out of a jam, whatever the thing is. And then boy, strap in. Because if you get some one of these more sophisticated groups of people, what they will come up with as ideas will absolutely blow your mind.
Yeah, and I would say don't be focused too much on the structure and the techniques. Try to understand the situation and the problem and focus on the benefits that you can give them. Because there's a million formulas. There's a million different ways to do things. And if you get hung up on this has to be a sub-2 deal or a discount sale leaseback, you're shutting off the opportunity for finding better solutions.
So very true. And I think Ari and I would both strongly recommend that you grab this last ticket to the Creative Finance Summit that's available at the old $12.97 price. You can only get that by making a pledge to public radio here at WMKV. You're going to get it by going to WMKVFM.org. Scroll down to the bottom as long as you see a thing there that says Real Life Real Estate and it allows you to click it, then that ticket is still available. Ari, appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Very, very enlightening, and hopefully for everybody, not just for me. We will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.